Good evening and welcome to the first of our Crossroads coffee evenings. We're very glad that you've come. If you don't know who I am, my name's Johnny Prine, and I'm privileged to work here at Enfield Evangelical Free Church. What's our aim? Our aim by these evenings is simply... what was that noise? Oh, it's something in the kitchen. our aim this evening is simply to answer some questions that people have about Christianity. We hope that we can do that plainly. We hope that we can do that simply. We hope that we can do that clearly. And the format of the evening is very simple. In a moment, a very good friend of mine called Jonty, who used to work at Enfield Evangelical Free Church and now works at a church in Bushell Park, Jonty is going to speak for about 20 minutes. Then there'll be more coffee and tea or whatever you'd like served. And in that period, on the tables, there's a little green sheet on which, if you want to, you can write down any question you want about the talk you've heard. And then what will happen is, if you want to write down a question, I'll come round and take them in. They're anonymous, so you don't have to say who wrote it or put your name on it. And then I'll sit down with Jonty for a little while and ask him the questions that you've asked. And so we genuinely want to say that if it's a question for you, it's a question worth asking, but by writing it down, it can be completely anonymous. So thank you so much for coming. I hope that explains where we're going this evening, and I'll hand over straight away to Jonty. Thanks, Jonty.
Great. Well, thank you for coming along this evening. And as Johnny's just explained, my name's Jonty. And I want us to talk tonight about what Christians believe about creation. Where did we come from? Who made this world? Did someone or something make this world? We're going to try and answer some of those questions. And I want to start by telling you about a man whose name is Peter Atkins. There's a picture of him. He is, or was, I think he's retired now, he was the professor for physical chemistry at Lincoln College in Oxford University. A brilliantly intelligent man. He wrote most of the textbooks that university students use. If you've ever studied chemistry, I don't know how many of you have. If any of you have studied chemistry to degree level, you will certainly have used one of Peter Atkins' books. A brilliant mind. He was also my tutor at Oxford University when I studied chemistry. And I want to tell you about the first time I met him, the first tutorial. It's what posh Oxford word for study thing. I want to tell you about the first one I ever had. I walked into his study. He didn't do tutorials before 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He thought it was uncivilized. So I walked into his study. I was 18 years old. I was terrified. And I sat down in this very dark study, and he shone a light straight into my eyes. And I felt terrified. And then I looked around the room, and in the kind of the dimness of the room, I could see this enormous bookshelf, all the way from floor to ceiling, and the shelves were bowing under the weight of the books. And as I looked at the books more carefully, I realized every book on that bookshelf was written by him. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay. Then he lies back on his kind of lounge thing, and he said, I want you to imagine you're on a desert island. I thought, I come to study chemistry. What are we doing? I don't understand what's happening. And he said, I want you to imagine you're on a desert island. The sun is shining and the water's lapping at your feet. I'm beginning to hyperventilate. The bamboo shoots are behind you. There's coconut trees. Derive the second law of thermodynamics. I was 18. I didn't even know what the second law of thermodynamics was, let alone how to derive it from a bunch of coconuts and bamboo things. And that was my introduction to Peter Atkins. And to be honest, that was about as good as it got. Kind of went downhill. But a brilliant, brilliant mind, a brilliant man, but also a man who is passionate in his atheism. He passionately believes that there is no God. In fact, so much so that he's written a book called The Creation, which is about how there is no God. And then he wrote another book called The Creation Revisited, which is also about there being no God. And Peter Atkins, as he looked at me, sitting there saying that I do believe in God, he thought I was stupid. He looked at me with contempt. Now, you might say, how do you know that? I know it because he told me on several occasions. Not quite precisely in those words, but he once said in a debate with a Christian, he once said, the reason you believe in God is because your brain is starved of oxygen. I was having, at my very last dinner at Oxford, when I'd passed, amazingly, and I was sitting with him, next to him, at chemist's dinner, the final dinner, and he was asking me what I was going to do next. And I said, I'm going to go and work for a church. Because by this point, I'd passed, and I was not worried anymore. And he said, you don't really believe that stuff is true, do you? And I said, yes. And his response to me was, I promise, this is what he said. We're going to have to stop talking about this because I will become very angry. It's interesting, isn't it? He could not understand, this man with a brilliant mind, he could not understand how someone intelligent could believe there is a God. Now that's the problem, isn't it? And I want to try and show you tonight that I am not stupid. This is my kind of defense tonight, that I'm not stupid. I want to try and show you tonight that it is not an unintelligent thing to believe that there is a God. That's what I'm going to try and argue tonight. I'm going to try and show you that as we talk. You see, for a start, there are a number of very, very clever people who do believe. Who do believe that there's a God, far cleverer than I am. Have a look at this. Have a look at this quote here from a guy. This is a professor of quantum physics from a university in Georgia, and he says this. I love this. Listen to this. The significance and joy in my science comes in the occasional moments of discovering something new and saying to myself, "So that is how God did it." My goal is to understand a little corner of God's plan. See what he's saying? He's saying science doesn't necessarily push God out. Actually, science is simply discovering the way God did it. Well, have a look at this. And this is a better known scientist, perhaps. This is Francis Collins, who's head of the Human Genome Project, the project responsible for sequencing the DNA of human beings. Look what he says. The God of the Bible is also the God of the genome. He can be worshipped in the cathedral or in the laboratory. His creation is majestic, awesome, intricate, and beautiful, and it cannot be at war with itself. Only we imperfect humans can start such battles, and only we can end them. Do you see, he's saying he sees no contradiction between science and a belief in God. Now, I think the reason that Peter Atkins had this contempt for me was because he thinks that believing in God is for children. A little bit like something you should have left behind. So a little bit like stabilizers on a bike. You know when you learn to ride a bike? And you put stabilizers on your bike. And it helps you get started. You know, you can't do it yourself, so you need a little bit of support. And you're cycling on, and you learn to ride your bike, kind of going from side to side on these stabilizers. And then this is weird. My dad, right? I don't know if anyone answered this. My dad is a bit weird, I think. Because my dad took off one stabilizer and thought that that would help me learn to ride my bike. So he took off one. So, of course, I got on my bike, having learnt to ride it with two, and I just went poof, and just fell off because there's no stabilizer there anymore. But anyway, eventually I learnt the way to ride my bike is just leaning one way. That doesn't help at all. Anyway, then he took that stabilizer off, and then I fell over again. But then as I grew older, as I grew up, I could leave behind the stable. I didn't need those things before. They got me started when I couldn't do it on my own. But now that I'd grown up, I could move on. Listen, if you saw me riding a bike with stabilizers now, you would think I'm stupid. And that is Peter Atkins' thinking. You see, this is the way it goes. Okay, people only believe in God because they need, because there's stuff we don't understand. And because we don't understand it, we need God to kind of fill in the gaps. You know, so this is the classic, when it's raining, Mummy, why is it raining? God is watering the flowers. Now, we tell that to little children, don't we? Can I say that's not actually true? But it's a good little explanation for children because it's nice and the children can enjoy it. But as they get older, you begin to teach them the water cycle, you see. And you replace God, because now they can understand something proper, with the water cycle, which is scientific. And this is, see, this is the misunderstanding. People think that God is just there to explain what we can't work out for ourselves. And as soon as you've worked out what it really is about, well, then you don't need him anymore. Now, that's a problem if that's the way you think, because the more we discover, the space for God gets squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. Do you understand that? We don't need God as much. And so lots of these guys, these scientists who are pursuing this atheist agenda, are simply saying, we don't need God, because now we can explain it on our own. Actually, logically, that is not a consistent argument. To say that now we can explain it, we don't need him anymore, that doesn't logically necessarily follow. Because we need to change our thinking, and this is where this quote's so helpful. God is not the God of the gaps. He's the God of the science. And that is what I want to show you. You see, so what we've done so far is we've seen that there are clever people who believe in God, and there are clever people who don't believe in God. So actually, it can't be science that's the issue. You understand that? If there's clever people who do believe and clever people who don't believe, they can look at the same evidence and reach a different conclusion. So it can't be the science that's the problem. Peter Atkins' contempt for me actually wasn't driven by science. It was driven by something else. And we've got to go, well, what? What's driving that? And I want to try and show you that behind the science, there lies what I want to call and what I want to think about now as worldviews. The way people view the world. And basically, there's two. There are two worldviews. I mean, obviously, there's lots of versions of these. But basically, there's two. The first one, you can read about in this book. This is a good book. This is the Bible. And in the Bible, it starts like this. Here's a worldview. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Let's put it up there. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, that is the way the Bible starts. That is not, now listen to me, that is not something that can be proved by science. It is a worldview. It is a statement of faith. It's a worldview. That is one big worldview. Of course, the other big worldview is that there is no God. And that we live in a closed system. But neither of those are scientific statements. There is a God and there is no God. Neither of them are science. They are both philosophy. They are both worldviews. You see, here's the problem with science. Science can tell you a lot of stuff, but it can't tell you everything. Science is amazing. I love science. Christians, sometimes the Christians come across as hating science, as if science is some big enemy. I love science. I love chemistry. I love exploring this stuff. We're supposed to explore it. But the problem is that these two worldviews are what lie behind it. And science can only explore the visible universe. You see, if there is a God, then he is, by definition, outside of this visible universe. So I can't explore him using science, because he's outside of the physical realm in which science exists. So now we've got a problem. Some people say there is a God. Some people say there is no God. What do we do? You can't prove either of those statements by science. You can't prove them. You see, Atkins, I haven't got time for that. Let's move on. Science is limited. You have to understand. Now, you kind of know that. Let me give you an example. When I first met my wife, okay, she wasn't my wife when I first met her, obviously. That would have been weird. Hello, wife. No, so I just met. She was some random girl, hanging around, now science could have told me some stuff about her, couldn't it? She was at Oxford as well. Actually, she was studying biology, interestingly. So I should have brought her along as well tonight. Now, when I first met her, I could have done some experiments on her, couldn't I? And I could have learned quite a lot about her. I could have taken her to the laboratory. Come on, darling. I could have tested her DNA. I could have found out about her gene pool. I could have discovered whether she was going to be good breeding stock, whether it's going to be worth having children with her. You know, whether did she have genes for intelligence and good looks, because they were going to need it from somewhere. And, Jimmy, I could have done these experiments on her. Or I could have done gas chromatography on her body odor to find out how she smelt. And I could have discovered a lot of stuff about her. But not everything, because science is limited. You know, this is interesting. Science wouldn't even have been able to tell me her name. Wouldn't have told me what she loved. Wouldn't have told me what made her happy. Wouldn't have told me what got her excited. Wouldn't have told me the passion. And in fact, it would have told me not much. Science is great, but it is limited. And here's our problem. Science is great, but to suddenly jump from science to saying, well, there's no God, that is a jump that actually science can't make. Okay, we need to rattle on. So how do you make a decision? Well, I want to suggest that you look at the evidence and say, well, as I look at this world, does it fit the hypothesis there is a God or there's not a God? Let me just show you. All I'm going to try and do now in the next couple of minutes is show you that they are equally likely. Okay, that's all I'm going to try and do. At the moment, to show you that they are at least equally likely. That to say there is no God is no more intelligent than to say there is a God. Let me show you what I mean. I've got three bits of evidence. You see if these fit with your experience of life in this world. Here's the first one. The world appears to be designed. Do you think that's true? Don't you look around the world and feel like there's design? It feels as if things... It's interesting. You watch the nature programs. You listen to David Attenborough as he tries to explain, and he's searching for words. How often do they use this language? This animal is perfectly designed for its habitat. What a strange language to use. In fact, Richard Dawkins, in his very famous book, The Blind Watchmaker, listen to this. This is in the introduction to his book. This is a brilliant book. I'll talk about it again in a second. Listen to this. It is almost as if the human brain... Think, I haven't put it up here, so just listen. It's almost as if the human brain was specifically designed to misunderstand Darwinism and to find it hard to believe. Dawkins says, it appears that the human mind has been designed to not understand evolution. Doesn't that strike you as slightly odd? Isn't that an odd thing to say? Now, he does tackle it. In fact, that is what this whole book is. This whole book, The Blind Watchmaker, is the watchmaker is simply the argument. You find a watch, you assume it's got a designer. You see a world that appears to be designed, you assume it's got a designer. He argues that the design is apparent, that it has come about through a random occurrences and natural selection. And I've got to say, this is a brilliantly clever piece of science. Okay, Dawkins is not stupid. I do not hold him in contempt as much as he does for me. It's a brilliantly clever piece of science. It's an incredible piece of human intellectual thinking. But I've got to say, what if the world appears to be designed because it is designed? Do you not see that that is at least equally as likely? He writes a big fat book. It took us a long, long time. Up until 200 years ago, everybody assumed the world was designed by a creator. Because that's the obvious assumption. It took us a long time to come up with an alternative explanation. So it is at least equally likely. Okay, let me give you another piece of evidence. What about this? The world appears to be broken. If I went out onto the streets of Enfield and said, what's wrong with the world? How many people would say to me, nothing? I think we'd all say there's something wrong with the world. It feels broken. Now, of course, that's a nonsense. If there's no God, and if we're simply here by random accident, it's a nonsense that it's broken. How can it be broken? It's an accident. How can an accident be broken? And yet you all know that we can't get away from the fact it feels broken. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do was to take a funeral for a 3-month-old little baby. A little girl called Grace who died because she had a genetic disorder. And the tiny little white coffin was put in and put in front of me. And it felt wrong. I did not stand there and say, well, this is just the way it happens. In fact, let me push that harder, and I want you to, we've got to be honest about this. I didn't stand there and say, actually, it's good that Grace has died because her genetic disorder would have been passed on to another generation. She needed to die. That doesn't fit. It feels broken. Now, let me ask you this. Again, I'm not saying this proves there's a God. I'm saying it's a clue. A clue that perhaps the world appears to be broken because it is broken. And the Bible, as you read the Bible, explains that God made a good world, but it has been broken. We've turned away from him. We've not listened to him. We've gone our own way. And it's broken. I think the fact it appears broken points to the fact there's a God. Okay, one more piece of evidence. And that is that the world appears to have meaning. We search for meaning, don't we? Peter Atkins, going back to him, he was quoted in the Daily Telegraph as saying this: the human race must realize how insignificant it is. We're just a bit of slime on a planet belonging to one sun. And yet there's something in us that says, no, we are more than that. We search for meaning. People go on all sorts of trips around the world to try and discover what this world's about. We ask questions like, why are we here? What's the point of life? Where's the meaning? Let me ask you again, what if the world appears to have meaning? Because it does have meaning. Because you're not just a bit of slime on a planet belonging to one sun, but a creature created by a designer God. Now, I could go on, there's evidence, I could give you more and more clues. None of these prove that there is a God. But they point very powerfully to the fact that it would appear there is. Now, all I've done at this point is argue that there is a God and there is no God, and they are equally intellectually acceptable. I actually think that intellectually and logically, these clues point powerfully to there being a God. But I'm trying to be generous. So what do we do? I've got no time left. So what do we do to answer the question? Because this is a disaster, isn't it? Because all I've done is say, well, we don't know and we can't know. You're right, we can't know. Unless God chose to show us. And I'm going to just show you some words in the Bible, and you might want to pick these up when we talk in a minute. And just look at these words clearly. And this is my last thing as we finish. This is from the Bible. No one has ever seen God. That's the problem. We don't know. Is there a God or not? We don't know. We can't do science to find him because we can't see him. We can't experiment on him. We don't know. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. Right, hold your brains together for 2 seconds. We're going to do this really quick. Can you see it talks about this? This is weird, isn't it? Because God, the one and only, who's at the Father's side. There seems to be this weird thing about God. We're told that there's something about God which is called Father, and yet there's something or someone, the one and only, who's at the Father's side, they seem to be God in some way, and the one who's at the Father's side has made God known. What is that about? That's Christmas. That's Christmas. That is Jesus, who the Bible teaches is God, come to earth to make God known. So let me wrap all this up. Actually, the question that most matters in the universe is, who's Jesus? Is Jesus really God or not? Because there's no other way of knowing. We can look at our science things, we can all make our own decisions, we can say, well, I think this and I think this. But if Jesus really is God, then we need to listen to him. Which means we need to look at Jesus. We need to read about him. Whatever you do, don't dismiss him. That's a big claim to make, isn't it? He's the one who's made God known. You read his life, you'll discover he does amazing things, making God known. He dies on a cross. Then he rises from the dead. And then your question is about history, not science. And then you need to get a historian to come and tell you how historically reliable the Bible is. And I think that's happening in 2 weeks' time. But for tonight, I'm going to leave you with that. But I want you to see Jesus and to think about him. I have chucked loads of stuff at you, but thank you very much for listening. And please do scribble down questions. And I'm really, really happy for you to ask questions. Please don't feel you have to be polite. I'm really happy for you to ask questions. I'm happy for you to disagree and to argue.
Another question that at least a couple of folk have written down here is, and how do you feel about evolution then, which is kind of connected in some way, isn't it, to that? So,
yep. How do I feel about evolution?
Or do you believe in evolution? That was what the other bit of paper said.
Yeah, that's a more scientific... Yeah. How do I feel? It's a bit touchy-feely, isn't it, for scientists? Okay. Again.
Can I ask another question then?
Go on then.
No, because it's similar.
Yep.
Is the Earth old enough to allow life to develop in all its sophistication through random processes? Which is kind of connected, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. This would take a while. I can give you the short answer.
Yes.
I'll give you the short answer. No, I don't believe the world was created through evolution. That raises lots of questions. I do believe that the theory of evolution is an elegant, scientifically pretty robust theory. So please don't hear me. I do get upset when Christians are written off as being kind of unscientific and stupid, as if, you know, we're thick. I want to be scientific. My wife studied under Richard Dawkins at Oxford University. She studied biology. She studied this stuff. So yes, it is a good theory that it fits some of the evidence around us. But my big problem is, actually, if you push evolution properly, it's unlivable and it's horrific. Survival of the fittest is a horrible thing. As I said earlier about that little baby, and as I said earlier about what it says about how you treat the poor. Now, of course, no one would really say this. But that's to do into... then so we argue, well, actually, no, we should love each other, and we should be kind to each other, and we should, you know, for the good of our communities, we should do this. But that's not actually true, is it? Why wouldn't we just kill everyone who has a genetic disorder? Why wouldn't we just do that? Because we are weakening the human race. And there are some scientists who have the courage to argue like this, but very few, because it just sounds stupid when you begin to push it that far. So I think it's a very... So as I say, The Blind Watchmaker, I really enjoyed reading The Blind Watchmaker. It's got very pretty pictures in it too. And it's intellectually very engaging. And yet ultimately, I think it leaves me cold. And it brings me back to what I was saying earlier. I think evolution is intellectually obviously it is enough for people to say, right, great, we don't need God anymore. I don't think it's nearly powerful enough to say this is definite that now God, that this definitely proves God does not exist. Now, Rose, people may want to come back on this. Now, you'd say, well, why don't I believe in the theory of evolution then? If I say it's intellectually credible and there's evidence that points towards it. I think there's problems with it too. There's holes in it too. But for me, it comes down to a much more fundamental issue about the nature of God. And in some ways, this is never where I'd start a discussion with someone on these issues. Actually, as I said earlier, it's all about Jesus. It's all about whether he is who he said he is. Because if he is, then actually, whether it was evolution or whether it was six literal days or whether it was six periods of time, if Jesus is the Son of God, then those things are interesting to argue about and important to argue about, but they're not as important as Jesus. Mm. But I do believe that the Bible is a book that's true. I believe the Bible is a book given us by God. I believe the Bible teaches us that God made the world. He made the world in 6 days. He made it out of his creativity. He made it not using a process where things just kill each other, and that's the way creation comes into being. He used a creative purpose which was about life and about life being produced and growing. Does anyone want to ask more?
I mean, I'm quite happy if anybody wants to ask a question to follow up on that. Or I can ask another question.
Well, can I ask them, if one problem with evolution is why do humans have this sense of good and evil? Where does that come in?
Yeah, no, I think that's another clue. No, see, yeah, but this is interesting, right? So all those clues I showed you earlier, I have heard them argued why evolution, in an evolutionary way, they are advantageous to the human race. And so why evolution can explain them. So, you know, so even the morality, you know, there is a positive thing about morality which is good for the race, and so you could imagine it's part of evolution. So I'm saying none of those things prove, so morality doesn't prove there's a God, but it does point, it's what I'd expect to see. So in a world that was made by God, I'd expect to see a sense of good and evil. I'd expect to see a sense of meaning. I'd expect to see a kind of an order and a design. I'd expect, if it got broken, to see that it was broken. That's what I'd expect to see, and it fits. Everything fits with that, if that makes sense.
Jonty, there are two other questions that are very linked to what we've been talking about, but just so that I'm being fair to people and asking specific questions. So one that you've kind of touched on there, but perhaps be a bit more specific. The question is, do you literally believe the account of Genesis and why? So I presume it's talking about Genesis 1.
Yep.
And where it talks about in 6 days, God created the earth. Now, you just touched on that, but someone's asked specifically about that. So could you answer that, please?
Yep, I do believe that God created the world in 6 days, literally. Six 24-hour periods. Now, some people would say, well, but that's ridiculous because the world is millions and millions and millions of years old. And, you know, you can see that. You know, you can test the earth and it's millions and millions of years old. How can you possibly believe this kind of fairy story of 6 days? Do you want my short answer? I'll give you... It's not that short, I warn you. It's just shorter than the long one. In the biblical account, when God made the world, when he made a man, what did he make? He made a man. If you'd seen the man 30 seconds after God finished creating him, how long has the man been around for? 30 seconds. How long does it look like he's been around for?
30 years.
Okay, so when God makes a tree, you see the tree, 30 seconds after God's made it, it has an appearance that it's been there a lot longer. You cut it down, it's got rings in it. You see, God's pattern is to create a mature creation. I have no problem with that at all. For those who know the stories, when Jesus turned water into wine, water that he instantly turned into wine, when they tasted the wine, how long has it been around? About 30 seconds. But this is the best wine. This must have been around for years. Because when God creates, he creates maturity. So I have no problem that the earth appears to be millions and millions of years old. That fits with what the Bible teaches. That God creates with an appearance of maturity. That's fine.
That's okay. Your short answer.
That was my short answer, yeah.
And that the question here, just so I've asked the question because someone's written it down, children and young people are mainly taught that creation took millions of years. How does this fit with the Bible worldview? So you've just said that. Do you want to add anything more to that?
No, but I'm going to. I think we've got to be a little bit careful that we don't get too hung up on this issue. My kids are going to be taught evolution at school. And that's okay. I don't need to panic about that. Because I want them to understand that is the main scientific theory of the day. We live in a country which is not a Christian country anymore. It's a secular country. It's a materialistic-based country, not a God-based country anymore. And so we need to not kind of become so defensive that we kind of argue and fight the wrong fight, you know? This isn't the issue. It really isn't the issue. The issue is Jesus. And I constantly want to be saying to people, you know, I will never convince someone that God created the world in 6 days. I know that. But I don't think I'll ever convince someone that there's a God. The only way that will happen is when they meet Jesus for themselves and they say, this Jesus bloke's interesting. This Jesus is extraordinary. He was only 33 when he died, and yet he turned the whole world upside down. What is going on with this man? In a tiny little backwater in the middle of nowhere when there's no internet and anything, and yet thousands of years later, we're still talking about him. People willing to die for him. People willing to risk everything for him. There's something about this man. That's the battle we need to fight. That's where we need to go. So I don't... In some ways, I'm not going to argue with you about whether there's sick. If you find the theory of evolution intellectually satisfying, that's fine. Let's argue about Jesus. Let's look at Jesus. Let's talk about him. And then, as you discover him, then you'll discover God. And then you can make your decisions. You can look at it for yourself. But I just don't want us to get hung up on the wrong issue. You know, sometimes I think we overdo this.
I don't know whether it's helpful, but I remember some years ago there was someone who had no knowledge of Christianity at all, and they agreed to simply read through Mark's Gospel with me, one of the accounts of Jesus in the Bible. And in the middle of our, this went over about 10 weeks or so, in the middle of this time, he asked me one week, he said, well, what's this stuff about creation? What do you believe about creation? And I said, well, I believe that God made the world, and I believe he made it in the way the Bible tells. And he said, oh, I'm not sure about that. And so I reached onto my bookshelf, and I gave him a book, all right? It was written by a creation scientist. And I gave him this book, and he said, well, that's good. I'm a scientist by background. I'd love to read this book. So he came back the next week, and he said, I read that book, and actually I didn't find it very satisfying intellectually. And I thought, oh, no. But he said, no, it's all right. He said, actually, because I've been reading Mark's Gospel with you, I'm convinced Jesus is God. And I've become so convinced that what the Bible says about Jesus is true, actually I can believe that Genesis happened in the way God... Because if Jesus is God and he's put God on display, then that fits with what Genesis says. So although I might not understand all the science of it, I actually now can believe that God did it. And I think so. I agree completely with John T. that actually having Jesus in the right place is often the answer, and that's what we're more interested about. But we believe actually that Jesus is the one who made the world, which is what the Bible teaches. John T., I must ask you a couple more questions, and then we must wind up. Although you'll be very free to stay and talk as long as you want. Is the Bible the only explanation for the creation and God? What about what other religions say?
Okay, well, I mean, that's a great question. And are you doing one of those?
We will be in the future one, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Okay, I sound like a stuck record, all right? But if you become convinced, or if you begin to at least think, well, perhaps there is a God, perhaps even from tonight, we've said it's at least intellectually possible. You don't have to be stupid to believe in God. If tonight you're going away saying, well, perhaps I should just look again at this God thing, then then you go, well, now what religion do I choose? There's loads of them. You know, which God am I going to go for? And again, I'd say a similar thing. Check them out. I'm not afraid of my kids learning about the different faiths and religions of the world. Because I think that Jesus is so extraordinarily compelling that as you read about him, you will find a complete difference between what he says and any other. You see, this is the issue. Only in the Bible do you find that God, this is only Christianity makes this claim, that God has become man and come to earth. Mm. And therefore, if Jesus is God, then you don't really need to look anywhere else. Because that is the greatest claim that anyone could ever make. So you've got to work it out. You've just got to work out whether Jesus really is God. And it's not that, he's not the first, but he's not the only person who's ever claimed to be God. Remember David Icke? Mm. He was an MP on the, he used to present Grandstand, I think. And then he was an MP on the Isle of Wight. He claimed to be God, claimed to be the Son of God. But not. There hasn't been many people who have been transformed by him. And it's fairly, I think it's quite easy to spot someone who isn't actually God, isn't it? I mean, these people back in Jesus' day, they weren't stupid. They weren't thick. You know, if someone says they're God, you are going to quickly be able to tell whether they are or not. And back in Jesus' day, many people were convinced that he was who he said he was. Coming back to the, it's back to Jesus again.
John T., one that you kind of touched on, and a couple of folk have asked this, if there's a God, why is there so much suffering in the world? Now, we are going to be dealing with the suffering issue in one of the future weeks, but do you just want to touch on that in the context of what you've been saying?
Yeah. A lot of people say, and I understand this, that suffering is one of the biggest problems people have with believing in a creator God. Actually, we need to understand that it is a big problem for atheists too. Because if, as I said earlier, if there's no God, then suffering really isn't that big a deal. You've got to get over it. It's just the way the world is. It's, you know, you're an accident. What do you expect to happen? And yet that doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work when suffering comes. That doesn't work. And yet what you discover when you read the Bible is that God, who made this world, he made it good, made it very good. And human beings, when we turn our back on God, we pushed him out. We said, there's no God. We don't want you. And the world was broken. That's why death and suffering and pain have come into our world. But God has done an amazing thing. He has made a promise. In fact, this whole thing of Jesus coming to earth was to sort that mess, to sort the problem. To sort the problem of human sin is what the Bible calls it. Rebellion, turning away. Jesus came to sort it out. That's why Jesus went around healing the sick and raising the dead and doing that stuff. He was showing that he has the power to put it right again. And when he died on a cross, his death was to solve the problem. He suffered, he died, so that we could be set free, so that we could be forgiven of our sin, and so that we could have hope. And he's promised, and the Bible promises very clearly, that one day this world will be completely put right. Mm. And it will be once again what it was when it was first created. Although even better. Sorry, that is like another 6-hour discussion.
John T, one last question then, which maybe we'll just tie it together. So a very personal question for you, please. What difference does it make to you as you do life that you believe that there's a creator?
Okay. Firstly, of 174, it means I actually believe that I am special. Mm. Not more special than you, but I have significance and I have value. Mm. I believe that I am created in the image of a God who loves me. I am not a piece of slime on a planet belonging to one sun. It has massive implications for how I view myself. I do not have to prove myself. I do not have to earn money and be impressive because there's a God who loves me. It also has massive implications for how I treat you, because I also believe that you are valuable. And I believe that you were created by a designer God. It also has big implications for what I think my life is really all about. See, if there's a God who made me, then knowing him is really all that matters. And that's what I want to spend my life doing. The reality is that I've turned my back on him. I try and live my own way. You know, Frank Sinatra. I did it my way. That was my Frank Sinatra impression. I know, wasn't that good. But the reality is that I try and do it my way. Then it goes wrong. And I need to be turned back. I need Jesus to bring me back and to live in relationship with God. So I'm valuable, you're valuable, and knowing God is where I find meaning.
John T, we need to cut there in terms of... but we do want you to feel you can hang around for a while and chat around your tables and even nab John T one-to-one if you want to ask him some more. Thank you for coming. Over the next four Saturday evenings, there will be similar gatherings to this, but different subjects every week. So next week, we're going to be looking at what Christians believe about humanity. So same format. You're really welcome to come, and you're really welcome to bring others as well. Then also, just on the way out, on the welcome desk as you leave, which sounds odd saying on the welcome desk as you leave, but on the what's called the welcome desk as you leave, there are two things, and you're welcome to just pick them up. The first is a booklet by a man called John Blanchard, who we've had to speak at this church, that's called Evolution, Fact or Fiction. And it's a helpful little book which says kind of things that John's been saying. And they're there for you to take, so please feel free to pick it up if you'd like to do that. But perhaps even more importantly, you'll also find there John's Gospel, which is where that verse on the screen comes from, which sets out that Jesus is God, through whom the whole world was created, and then tells us the story of Jesus' life. And many of the signs, many of the clues that Jesus gave in his life that point to the fact that he's God who became man and came that we might know God. And you might not be convinced of that, but I read this in a book. I was just reading a book earlier today, and the person who wrote the book quoted a bumper sticker. Do you remember when bumper stickers were all the rage? People would put things on the back of their car and people would crash into them because they were trying to read them. You know, it was always a bit of a problem, I thought. But this bumper sticker said this: "My mind is made up. Please don't confuse me with the facts." Now, actually, I think, even as I think in my own life, I'm often like that. I think, I've made up my mind about that. And when confronted with facts
what are said to be facts, I kind of say, no, I'm not even going to investigate them, even if they may be true. And I wonder if some of us are like that about what the Bible says. We say, no, I don't believe what the Bible says, but that's normally because of what someone else has told us the Bible says, rather than we've actually investigated it for ourselves. And so we'd love you just to pick up that part of the Bible, John's Gospel. Or if you want a whole Bible, there's a pile of them there as well. You can just take one of them as well, free of charge. We'd love you to have it. But thank you for coming. And Jonty, thank you very much for speaking. But please nab Jonty if you want to ask him anything directly. I think you should clap Jonty and say thank you.